This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
There you go. That was how the final game of the Jim Montgomery era ended. And it ended with a whimper. Yeah. Bruins lose to the Columbus Blue Jackets. And Monty fired today. Scoops Keefe way ahead of this one as he broke the news at about quarter of two before we even came on the air. Had the big announcement. I'm pretty surprised that no one else picked up on it. I'm pretty surprised that no one else got this because once it's out there, right? Once it's out there, you'd imagine that Porter's and the DuPont, I don't know if Porter's, is Porter still with the team this year? I don't know. But either way, DuPont and, you know, Haggerty and all these other people.
Fluto,
exactly. You know that they're banging the door down. You guys firing, he's fired? You fired him? It's announced already? This is a done deal? What? No one else reported it. No one else had it. Scoops Keefe stands alone as the one reporter here in the entire city, in the entire country, in the entire world.
Wow.
That had it.
When you put it that way.
I mean, it's true, right? How many people cover the NHL and cover the Bruins?
Lots. They didn't have it. That's why
I did not have it.
Tend to think there's a chance that Scoops Keefe knew before the person who was losing his job.
Yeah, I'd imagine that's probably the case, too. Although, if I'm Jim Montgomery, I'm not surprised by this news, I don't think.
No.
The writing was on the wall before the season even started without a contract extension. I think that was pretty clear that they weren't totally sold on this guy, despite the fact that, as we just heard from Razor, who will be joining the show here later on in the hour, had a tremendous, tremendous record. 120 wins in two-plus seasons. I mean, that's nothing to shake a stick at, and that's not something that I think necessarily is going to be easy to replicate with this group. Montgomery's record was 120-41-23. That is a tremendous record. And because, well, I think it's because of a lot of different things, but mostly because you get off to a bad start, and that's not going to work here for the Jacobs. It's not going to work for Cam Neely. It's not going to work for Don Sweeney. It's not going to work for anyone. They're willing to tolerate a flame out at the end of the season. They're willing to tolerate you losing in the first round, even when you're supposed to be a Stanley Cup champion, right? Like, I mean, that first year with Montgomery, you're not going to fire him after the first year. But they were willing to tolerate that. If that same thing happened this year, they would have tolerated it. If they had gotten off to a good start and then crapped out towards the end of the season and lost in the first round, they would have tolerated that, I'm sure, too. This is the way they operate. They will not tolerate people disengaging early in the season. You got to get them hooked, and you got to keep them. You got to keep them on the line at least until March, maybe even through the summer. And then you want to flame out at the end of the season. Fine, just get that playoff gate, get those people in the door, and let's get people excited about this team. No one's excited about this team. The team's not excited about this team. And Monty, listen, God bless him. He tried everything. That's one thing you got to say about him, whether you thought he was a good coach or not. He tried everything this year. He threw the kitchen sink at this roster. He put fourth liners on the first line. He had different lines all throughout the game. Period to period, he didn't know what lines were going to be coming out here. He was benching Pasternak, Marchand. I mean, guys were – he was sending messages.
He took McAvoy off the power play.
McAvoy off the power play is another good one there. Those are the three key guys on this team. Pastrnak, Marchand, McAvoy. He told all three of them, you guys are all on notice here. And he was doing it for his job, right? He was doing it to save his job. And none of it mattered. I mean, you saw that game last night. How many shorthand? They gave up two shorthanded goals in that game.
Yep.
This is a team that basically either if they've given up on their coach, I don't know. It seems more like they've given up, period. And to have that happen this early in the season, 20 games into the season, is, I agree, unacceptable. But it goes beyond Jim Montgomery. I think it goes way beyond Jim Montgomery.
And management was complicit in this with the lack of an extension. That's the reality.
Agreed.
Because which season would you say was his better season? First year or second year?
I got to say the first year.
Just because of the regular season
dominance.
Because
they had such a ridiculously good
But then they peter out in the playoffs. Last year they actually win a playoff series. Mm-hmm. Were better in the regular season.
It was against the Maple Leafs.
Expected.
So it's, I mean, if they played the Maple Leafs in the first year, then they probably would have beat them too. But fine, yeah.
He still advanced.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I was thinking about, because, you know, they're not a terrible team right now. You say he saw this coming, but he did make what I think is sort of a last-ditch effort reminder. Well, we're in the playoffs right now,
yeah,
and it's almost Thanksgiving, basically. Sort of an indication we're not as bad as maybe it feels we are. Statistically, it doesn't match the standings as to how bad we're playing in all areas of the game. And it made me think of a guy like Pete Carroll, who takes over a good team,
yeah,
and never had a losing record, but was fired. Like, you're trending in the wrong direction. And if you believe his first year was his best year, step back the second year, now a significant regular season step back the third year, you're trending in the wrong direction. And then you marry that up with the fact that they clearly had a hesitation, right? He won a playoff series.
Definitely.
Last year. If they wanted to, they could have extended him based on, well, we went deeper last year, we feel like we're putting together a good team, we're going to have a chance. They didn't. So
I thought the first year was better, but I don't think they got worse in the second. Does that make sense? I think they kind of plateaued. Like, they didn't have as good of a regular season, but they had a good, say they were a 100-win,
sure,
100-win, 100-point team. Mm-hmm. Not 100 wins, that'd be a record. But yeah, they were a 100-point team, and they won a playoff round. So I don't consider that.
So he had two good seasons.
He had two good seasons. I don't consider that a drop-off.
So he had two good seasons and two bad months.
Yep.
And he got fired.
In the two bad months, see you later. Here's
and the two
door.
Bad months came after they weren't ready to commit to him after two good seasons.
After two good seasons, they weren't ready
so
to do that.
So you created an atmosphere where this was going to be an issue, or you flat out tipped your hand and indicated it. Now, I will say, and I'll be interested to ask Razor this, he was of the belief most of the time that they were going to sign him to an extension. Like, he thought they liked him and he liked them and they were going to reach a deal on an extension, and that never came to fruition. Did that all change just based on this year? Maybe, I would, you know, one way that sometimes, because you bring up the management aspect of this.
Yeah.
So management invests in this team in the offseason, correct?
Yes.
And then the team looks worse. So is there a manage, you know, like, I'm giving him the players and I gave him better players, newer players, expensive players.
I thought this team would be better.
Okay. So
until I saw him the first game.
But isn't that a way to also pass the buck?
Sure.
I invest, GM Don Sweeney and President Cam Neely went out and added to this roster, upgraded this roster. Lindholm was the perfect fit, right? The perfect need, the perfect fit, married up, gave him a boatload of money. And it's not working. Well, blame the coach, because if it's not the coach, then it might be me, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that sort of a traditional
100%
way of doing business? And I feel like there might be a little bit of that here. Because on paper, you say his record, whatever, 2 years shouldn't be wiped out by 2 months.
Right.
That's pretty quick.
Here's Don Sweeney's statement, in case you missed it. He said, today I made a very difficult decision with regards to a coaching change, which, love that first sentence. Jim Montgomery is a very good NHL coach and an even better person. He's made some positive impact throughout the Bruins organization, and I'm both grateful and appreciative of the opportunity to work with him and learn from him. His accomplishments as the Bruins head coach include a record-breaking historic season, and I want to thank his entire family and wish them all the success and happiness with their next opportunity. Our team's inconsistency and performance in the first 20 games of this season have been concerning, and below how the Bruins want to reward our fans. I believe Joe Sacco has the experience to bring the players and the team back to focusing on the consistent effort the NHL requires to have success. We will continue to work to make the necessary adjustments to meet the standard and performance our supportive fans expect.
Focusing on the consistent effort.
Yep. That is, hey.
It's damning right there. That's
it's not my fault, right? I got you the players, and you're not motivating them enough. That's what he's saying.
Effort
right?
isn't good enough.
Don't look at me. It's the effort.
And I can't get rid of the effort, guys, so I got to get rid of the guy that's not getting the effort out of the guys.
Yeah, and let's also just remember that Don Sweeney has now fired three head coaches, has zero cups, and I mean, you know, generally GMs don't get that kind of leash. Generally, when you're on your fourth coach with no cups and a bunch of disappointing playoff flameouts, people start looking at you.
But isn't the but GM just, the president's buddy?
Yeah. I mean, right. I mean, that's the point. That's what I'm saying. Like,
they're tied at the hip.
There's not much accountability that is in this statement anyway. I'm not seeing any accountability from Don Sweeney. I'm not seeing anything like, hey, you know, I didn't put a good enough roster. I didn't do this. I didn't do that. No, no, no. It's the effort's not good enough. We'll make the necessary adjustments and try and meet that standard and blah, 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 whatever. The spotlight's got to turn to him at some point, and I feel like it just never does. You know?
And it's going to now. I mean, there's virtually no way it can. I mean, I guess if they win, the spotlight won't. Well, the spotlight will turn to him, and it'll look like he built a better roster and he made the right move at the right time.
And that the coach was holding them back. Sure, yeah.
If they continue to flounder and just kind of play low-level hockey with low-level energy and effort, then I think people are really going to start to say, well, the team wasn't as good as we thought it was, and who put the team together?
Yep. Paulie is in Dedham. Go ahead, Paulie.
Hey, what do you say, guys? What did I tell you? I told you early in the season, within the first week, we had that conversation of how this Florida team has demoralized them. They beat them down in the playoffs two straight years, coming out of the gate twice this year. They squeezed every last drop out of that lemon. And you're right, Christian, when you say this team isn't excited about this team. They're demoralized. They've lost their confidence and their belief in themselves. And they hear this. And it's not Montgomery's fault because they don't have enough firepower up front. But they hear the same voice in the room is a precursor to what's about to happen again and again. They're just getting used to losing. They're getting used to hearing him in the dressing room and then going, there's nothing. There's just, like you also said, there's a disconnect. You said that, Andy.
Yep.
You are correct. You know, it's just a precursor when they hear that, okay, I guess it's time to lose again. He just spoke. We're going to go get our ass kicked again. They weren't one of the top teams in the league anyways. The Rangers had them,
Florida Panthers. Yeah, there's a lot of other good teams. Thanks for the call, Paulie. I would say this in terms of that first week of the season. People said I was overreacting. I know what I saw, and I know that this team was built to beat the Florida Panthers. Right? It's kind of like, I don't want to say it's kind of like the Celtics with Golden State because it's a little bit different. The Warriors beat them 2 years ago. The Celtics have won a championship since then. Different story, but. When you have two cracks at that Florida team within the first, I don't know, what, 2 weeks of the season, whatever it was, and you get shown up, basically. I mean, they showed you up in both of those games. And that was, to me, a pretty early indicator that this team doesn't have it. And I don't necessarily think that Jim Montgomery changed his coaching style dramatically and suddenly forgot how to, you know, draw up a breakout. I don't think that this team suddenly, or that Jim Montgomery suddenly forgot how to motivate people. I just don't think that that happened. I think that you brought in some new players. You tried to get bigger and tougher. And instead of, even last night, who do they call up? They call up one of their skill guy. Not that they have a lot of those in Providence right now, but they call up a skill guy? No, they call up some goon to go out there and hit and fight and try and get a spark that way. And I'm sorry, but Cam Neely and Don Sweeney, it's kind of their philosophy, isn't it? I mean, they're the big bad Bruins.
Yep.
They're from that era. That's what they think wins in the NHL in 2024. And I'm sorry, it doesn't. You know, I mean, you move on from some guys, you have some turnover on the roster. And when you have an opportunity to go out there and spend, you're trying to get bigger and tougher and, sorry, Razor, who we're going to talk to in a minute, slower. They're slower. And they're not motivated. They're not anything. They're just dull and lifeless. And in a night where David Pastrnak does not register a single shot on goal, you know, is that the coach's fault? Like, are we going to throw all this on top of the coach's head and say, you know what? Sorry, Monty, but, you know, we really think that Joe Sacco is going to fix this. We really think that things are going to be better here once we have a different voice in the room and someone else communicating with these guys. There were changes made in the offseason. There's still a whole lot of players holdovers from these last 2 years, and I don't know what the hell happened to them.
And that's my – so you say, is it Montgomery's fault that Pasta doesn't shoot? My inclination is to want to say no, right? But he's coached him for 2+ years, and he shoots. Like, what has changed? What bottom fell out here? And Paulie may be right. Maybe the Panthers broke them. Maybe they're a broken team because – I find that hard to believe, just like I find it hard to believe that Jason Tatum on any given night is thinking about Steve Kerr when he shoots a three. You know what I mean?
Right.
I also find it hard to believe that these professional athletes go out against the Blues or the Flyers or whatever team and are thinking about, yeah, but it doesn't matter because we're just going to face the Panthers at some point and they're just going to kick our ass again like they kicked our, you know, like these are professional athletes. They've been doing this a long time at a really high level. And suddenly they can't because they lost to the Panthers twice in a week to open the season. It's just there's a disconnect. I go back to that word again. Disconnect somewhere. And I don't know where that disconnect is. And I don't know that Sacco's going to – I'm very dubious that he's going to fix it, that he's the be-all, end-all flex tape for you to just plug the leaks and all of a sudden this boat's going to be zipping right along.
And these signings you made in the offseason were big contracts.
Long, too.
Right? Big potential albatross contracts.
Absolutely.
You know? So
absolutely.
Good luck to whoever the next guy is. 617-779-7937. We'll continue with your phone calls. We'll talk to Razor, Andrew Raycroft, coming up in just a moment here. But first, here's Stiz with What's Trending.
This is Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI. On WEEI.
All right, I think I have the scoop.
Do you?
You ready for the scoop?
Scoop away.
Ready for the scoop?
We've been on pins and needles. Wait, wow.
Pins and needles. Jim Montgomery is out. Joe Sacco taking over.
Scoops Keefe lands another one. What can you say? What can you say about the guy?
I mean, he's more of a lock than anybody.
Yeah. Like, and it's not like he's pounding the pavement for Bruin school all day long, but when there's a story, he gets it.
No, and I mean, he tends to swoop in only on big stories.
Right.
So, you know, but he's got a high percentage.
He wasn't there when, like, Matt Patras got sent down to Providence or anything, like, but he's there for the big ones.
But aren't there plenty of people you can think of, and we don't need to, like, start, you know, shaming people in the media, but there's plenty of people you've thought of that, like, you've been burned. You believed them and they were wrong.
Right.
Never with Keefe.
Nope.
Never.
It hasn't happened. Neither has it happened with Andrew Raycroft, who predicted the Bruins' comeback the other night on the Nesson broadcast, which I was impressed by. He joins us right now here on WEEI Afternoons. Razor, how we doing?
Wonderful. How are you guys doing?
Doing just great. Big news here today. Jim Montgomery has broken by Keefe around 1:45 today, and we've been talking about it all day long, and it actually happened, so we didn't end up looking stupid. But, yeah, Jim Montgomery out. You talked to us before the season started. We talked about him being a lame duck coach. You told us that there was a lot of love for Montgomery in that room. Is that something that over these 20 games persisted? Are they going to be upset that this is happening in that locker room? How do you think this is going to land with this team?
Well, I mean, the guys got to look at themselves in the mirror now. I mean, no one was playing up to expectations and they didn't perform well enough. And in this game, the coach or pro sports for that matter, but especially hockey, two and a half years is the shelf life of most guys. And unfortunately the Bruins didn't get off to the start they needed, wanted to, and you lose the way they did last night with the schedule that's ahead of them. You need to make change and get back into the mix here.
If I agree with what you're saying there, isn't firing the coach at this point kind of letting players off the hook a little bit?
No, I think it's the opposite, because if you continue to let Monty coach, listen, they were very, very patient. I know you guys have been hearing fire Monty for about 4 weeks now, because I know I've heard it. Yep. And I've been continually to say, you got to be patient, got to be patient. And they lost to Dallas 7-2. Everyone, fire Monty. But they looked at this run at home, and they looked at this run in the schedule where it was a little bit softer, and they had a tough schedule, and they're 500, so they had an opportunity to turn around. And you lose to a team you should beat at home on a Saturday afternoon in overtime against St. Louis with the lead in the third period. And then what happened last night, it's just it's hard to recover with all that's happened prior to this. And I think that's where the axe comes down. Listen, the Bruins have scored one goal in the third period all season long at home. So that's not ideal. And there's other underlying. They're the second worst team in goal differential in the National Hockey League. So there's it's not just I don't think the players are going to be let off the hook. I think if anything that the light shines brighter on them now.
Is there a disconnect, or was there a disconnect between Jim Montgomery and the players? I mean, it's hard to look at a roster where basically 90% of the players are underperforming, underachieving, and not look at the coach. Like, how do you come to grips with that? What the hell happened to start this year?
Listen, the players will know that. On the outside, you never know that. But I was just saying, I was around for coaches getting fired, and as players, you can kind of look back at that one moment where it was like, all right, this guy's lost the room. And I'm assuming that happened in this situation, just in hindsight of the way the last few weeks have gone. But I didn't see it from the outside. I didn't see one moment that said, oh, this is big trouble. I believe that they were going to turn it around with Monty. I thought they were going to hit their stride, but the special teams are at the bottom of the league. Their defensive structure, like you guys just said, looks like a shell of what we've been used to seeing, and those have been staples. Those have been automatics for the Bruins. So, again, it, at the end of the day, it is the players that are playing, but like we know, coaches are the – you can't fire 20 players. It's the oldest cliche in sports, but it's the truth. And in this case, Monty's the one that has to pay for it.
You can't fire the players. That's true. You can fire the guy who put the roster together. This is a team that won 100 and plus whatever game, I don't know, 120 games. You tweeted it out today. I forget the exact record, but this was a team that seemed like it was on track to, at the very least, maintain sort of the status quo with the Bruins of having a good regular season and then kind of flaming out in the playoffs. That suddenly changed here after one offseason. Do you look at Don Sweeney and the moves that he made here for Lindholm, for Zadorov, for Jones, for some of these guys who aren't even with the team anymore or down in Providence? Is that something that you think has contributed to this?
I don't. I thought they were awesome moves. I thought that's exactly what they needed. I was listening. You guys were talking about, yeah, they got bigger and they got slower. Well, I heard nothing but cries of they need to be bigger last year in the playoffs against Florida, or the year before when they lost. Well, you got to get rid of Grizzlick. He's too small on the back end. They need bigger, stronger defensemen like Nikita Zadorov. And then they go and get him, and now it's that doesn't work either. So I think they're still built very well. I think they have a bunch of guys that should be performing and playing better than they are, and as players and as individuals, I think they should be better than they are. And so no, I think this group's still really good. I think they've had a bad start. They had a bad bad run, and mentally have had to deal with it, and they're hoping, I guess I use the word hope, but I think inside the room these guys are going to have to recognize that up next is big changes within the locker room. So they better get some wins.
Do you think management was complicit in this start with the not giving Montgomery an extension during the offseason, coming off 200-point seasons and a playoff series win?
Well, that's part of this story. I don't know. I don't want to say complicit because I don't know what the inner workings were, but I'm positive that the outside noise wouldn't be clamoring for Monty to be fired 4 weeks into the season if he had another year on his contract.
Right.
So that's certainly a part of this puzzle. I don't think there's blame on either side. I don't think that, but it is part of this. I don't think we'd be taught. I know we wouldn't have been, I wouldn't have been hearing about fire Monty 3 or 4 weeks ago if he had another year on his deal, just because of the record that we just talked about that he has in the regular season. It is a piece of this puzzle, no question.
Is Joe Sacco going to be a placeholder? I know he's an interim coach. Do you think that gets converted? I mean, do you think that there's a chance that this sparks this team and that he can turn things around?
I think, yeah, no question. He was a Jack Adams finalist as well in Colorado, 12, 13 years ago when he got his first head coaching job. He's been here for 11 years. He just got the associate bump in the summer, which is kind of interesting at this point as well. So Joe is really well respected. What changes, right? The assistant coach, and this is where those relationships and the guys that have been struggling, they've gone to Joe all season long. They've gone to Joe the last few years. He really knows these guys on probably more of a personal level than a head coach does. Head coach is taking care of everything. Associate, assistant coach is on the ice, in pregame skates, on optional skates, trying to help the guys that are in and out of the lineup. So he knows these guys really well. He knows what makes them tick, and I think he will be able to communicate just a little bit differently. And And again, he's been a head coach in the league. He has his own views that will be different from what Monty was doing. They're probably very, very small and very nuanced, but that could be all that this team needs. Because again, you guys spelled it out. Not much has changed. They were very good just 6 months ago. They got to the second round of the playoffs. They shouldn't be where they are now. And I think, you know, having an internal audit is better than going and get someone from the outside.
We're talking with Andrew Raycroft, Ness and WEEI. Razor, where do you start if you're Sacco? Because right now you have bottom of the barrel special teams, bottom of the barrel scoring, bottom of the barrel goaltending, like in the NHL. Which one of those things do you sort of take on first?
Yeah, we had Berge on the Allcast last night, yeah. and just kind of talking with him, who is the most largest voice of reason that any of us can have. He talked about the defensive zone. The defensive zone structure has been an absolute staple. So you start with that, because that's probably the easiest thing to kind of clean up and really drill into as well. Make it simple. Pick one thing, do that really well, and then move on to the other things. And the other thing is special teams. I mean, it's been an automatic that this team is in the top 10, let alone the top 5 in both categories, penalty kill and power play, for as long as I've been covering the team, as long as I came back from playing. And that's number 2. But certainly defensive zone structure, probably a little neutral zone structure, getting back to not allowing open opportunities, get connected in their own zone, and then special teams. That's where I start.
So you acknowledge that the failure to give Montgomery an extension is at least a piece to the puzzle here of the poor start. The negotiations...
No, not the poor start. The fact that everyone talked about him getting fired.
Okay, well, at least... Yeah, so adding the spotlight to the poor start, maybe, along those lines. But do you believe with Swayman, who has been a part of the poor start, who hasn't been good, do you believe the negotiations and the dragging their feet and getting that done late is contributing to the way he's playing right now? Or is that more about what you just talked about? Is it the D zone and what's going on in front of him? What do you think is going on with Swayman?
Well, it's certainly what's going on in front of him. It's the fact that PK, up until that game in Dallas, he 5-on-5, he had one of the best save percentages in the National Hockey League. I don't know what it was. I haven't checked it since the last, but he gave up 12 goals in the last two starts, so I'm assuming he's dropped out of the top 10. I haven't looked tonight. But it was the PK that was killing him. There was that game last Tuesday, he played great, but he gave up two power play goals that are wristers from the point that hit him and then find the backside. So his numbers have dropped because of the PK. The narrative is, and I know I've talked about this on the radio or wherever, is the narrative changes when you sign an 8-year, $8 million contract. Like, it just automatically does. You have a monster bullseye on your back. You are a lightning rod that is taller than everybody else on the team because you're now the starting goalie. And so he's going to take that. He has to take the brunt of this when, in two games, you've given up 12 goals in 1 week. And the other thing we talked about is he's never been the guy who had to fight through this kind of a stretch on his own. He always had someone else in his pro career. He never really did it in the AHL. And the reason they signed him for 8 years is because he has an amazing character. He's incredibly proud. He works really hard, and he's super talented. So he's going to fight through this, but there is a learning curve on this because it's just different. I've been the guy that carried people's clubs around for the season as a backup, but I've also been the guy that had to figure out how to work through some of my struggles while still playing. And it's hard. It's different. But I'm sure he will get through it, but I'm also sure this is part of having higher expectations. It's just human nature to try too hard at certain times.
Razor, you alluded to now that the coach has been fired, that there's going to be a spotlight on the players in the locker room. In the event that things don't turn around, the trade deadline's in March. Do you see wholesale changes potentially being made?
Well, for the sake of that question, I would think yes. I don't think the Bruins are very happy with where they're at right now. I think this organization is extremely proud of their record over the last 10 years and their ability to make the playoffs year after year after year. And they make changes when they feel like it's not there. And the only they pulled the first valve, and that's the coach. The next valve is reconstructing and figuring out what's not working within the players they have in the dressing room.
This is totally a hypothetical, but do you think that's going to become an issue, or do you think this will spark something? I think when we talked to you at Scores, I think you said you thought this team could win a couple rounds in the playoffs, and if things went right, maybe even go further than that. Do you think that reality can still be accomplished?
I do, of course, because the playoffs in the National Hockey League are different than the NBA or different than the NFL, where you have a pretty good idea of who the best teams are. The Celtics are the best team. They have the best two players in the league, or two of the best duo. They have the best bench, etc. You can look at that and say that's going to go through. The Stanley Cup playoffs, you get in. I feel like this team's built better for the Stanley Cup playoffs. They have to prove that by getting in, and there's a long way to that. But there's no doubt that they can't get a bump from this. They can't go on a run. At some point, I said it 2 weeks ago when Monty was struggling, the team was struggling. I still think this group is going to win eight in a row at some point, and they're going to go on a good run and feel good about themselves. And so no, none of that's changed for me. I'm disappointed for Monty and his family and just what the guys are going through right now, but it doesn't really change the end game. It's not like they're 0-20 and have no chance of making the playoffs. They're still in the mix.
Did Monty lose the room?
I don't know. I didn't get the vibe. I was with the team all last week. I thought they were working through it. I thought they were trying. I thought they were all compete. Like I even watching the game last night, I thought they competed. I thought the captain was working really hard. Nothing was executing on the power play. I'm not making an excuse for that, but usually when you talk about losing the room, you lose guys' effort. I thought they have lost their execution at certain times, but I didn't see an effort lost anywhere. But when you get fired, you lose the room. So whether he did or it was taken from him, he's lost the room.
All right, Andrew Raycroft, thanks so much for the time. Impromptu joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. We certainly appreciate it. Thanks so much.
No, you got it, guys. Thanks. Great show.
All right, thanks,
that's Andrew Razor Raycroft joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. We still got some Bruins calls hanging out on the line. We'll come back and wrap things up next with that and with Odds and Ends.
More of Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
Oh, see, you are such an apologist.
You're one of
for
these
JBJ.
Obnoxious people.
Obnoxious?
Yeah, when the guy was hitting around two bills, well, if we could at least get him up to 220 or so. Then
no, I think you have to be around 250 to be legit. I've never been a JBJ fan because
I know you haven't, right. And we know why.
Because but he doesn't hit Larry on a regular basis. He's so inconsistent.
Good enough.
Couple minutes left here, WEEI Afternoons, and some sad news today. As a member of the WEEI family passed away back on Friday, I think it was, on the 15th. And that is the voice you just heard right there arguing with his good buddy, Craig Mustard, Larry Johnson, who not only had the weekend show, a staple of weekend sports talk in Boston for decades, and a show that when I first started here and was doing weekends, I'd see those guys all the time. And I got to tell you, Craig was great. Larry was one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. Really, just from the first time I met him, very warm, very welcoming. He didn't know me. He didn't know me from the hole in the wall, and could not have been a bigger gentleman. Later on in my career, actually, it was maybe right around that same time, I was working in New Hampshire with Pete Shepard, who was much closer friends with Larry than I was, of course, and he did one of his caricatures of us, and it was a funny one. It was the two of us letting air out of a football, because this was right in the height of Deflategate. We're wearing Patriots uniforms, and Pete's holding the ball, and I was letting the air out of it. There was another one where it was Pete was blocking for me, and I was running behind him. If you've worked with Larry, he's probably drawn a picture of you or something along those lines. He was an awesome guy, a talented artist, and someone who I didn't know as well as I would have liked to, and I already miss a lot. I think that the world lost a really great person, and certainly someone who, as a broadcaster, as a person in general, that we should all probably strive to be a little bit more like. Larry Johnson is 75 years old, passing away this week in the Bay Point Nursing and Rehabilitation Center in Brockton. And, yeah, I don't know. You knew Larry. I mean,
yeah, I used to cross paths with him a little bit on the weekends. And as somebody who struggles at times to get along with people, as you'll be shocked to hear, I marvel at people that can get along with everybody and have sort of that genuine, cheery nature. And not to mention the skills. So he's a radio guy.
Right.
He's a cartoonist. He's a preacher, right? Like, because it was the teacher, the
teacher
preacher,
and the preacher.
The creature.
Yep.
Well, they had the creature, right? Dick Raddatz was part of it, too. He
That's
was the
right.
preacher, the third edition. But just a unique energy and emotion and viewpoint of things that I always appreciate. Because I think, you know, some of us get caught up in the negativity. And not that he wasn't critical, but he did it in a, I guess, probably a cartoonist preacher kind of way that it wasn't angry, and it wasn't as biting as maybe some of us come off at times when we're yelling or ranting about something, but certainly was very passionate.
Him and Craig used to go at it.
Absolutely.
Oh, they used to go at it.
And that's what I love about it, because I'm drawn to that. The people that can go at it but still get along and still be friends and coworkers, and like it's just a part of the business, like we're just yelling about sports here, and he was able to do that. And these are the people that I truly do think are unique. You know, Mike Reese to me is in that world. Mike Gorman, I think, is in that world. You never hear a bad word about Mike Gorman. And I would put Larry Johnson in that same category. Is everybody loved him. Everybody. So I think some people like to poke him over the years and get him fired up, because you could get him fired up.
You could, yeah.
But that was part of the fun, because it was all in good fun. So yeah, I think the world lost a good one there.
Yeah, they certainly did. By the way, I'm reading this from his obituary right now, which is up on FarleyFuneralHome.com, that in lieu of flowers, donations in Larry's memory may be made to the Joslin Diabetes Center. You can look up how to do that. Also, the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, support cancer care and research at Dana-Farber, and also the American Heart Association. All of those things is what he's and his family have put up there. If you would like to do something in remembrance of him, I know the funeral is going to be next week. If you want to look up where that is, I'm not going to denounce it here on the radio, but if you'd like to look up where that is, you can find it pretty easily. And yeah, we lost a good one here. And the WEEI family, I know it's changed a lot, certainly over the last couple of years, but I'll always remember the shows and the times I came in after Larry and Craig were done yelling at each other. And sometimes, you know, you'd see that or you'd hear it, you'd be driving in and think, oh boy, what am I walking into? And there'd be Larry with a big smile and just, you know, hey, Christian, how you doing? You know, and just was always very, very kind, very warm, and very welcoming to me when I was first starting off in the business here in Boston. And I'll remember him fondly. I think everybody who knew him is going to remember him fondly, and there's not a lot of people who get to say that when their life is over. So there you go. That
and
is
unique.
Yeah.
Also,
unique
in this world, I think it's harder and harder to be unique. And that's a truly unique individual. I remember he used to, like, I'd walk by or something, and he'd be doing his show, but he would, like, take his headset off and yell, like, a question, like, while he was still on the air. I was like, okay, I can get to that during the commercial break, Larry. But, yeah, definitely a unique, talented, and well-rounded, I would say, human being.
Yep, 100%. All right, that's all for us here today on WEEI Afternoon. Stick around. John Lyons and KJ Carson have you until 10 o'clock tonight. I'm sure they'll have a lot to say about this Bruins news and everything else going on. The Celtics have a big game tonight. Patriots news, Juan Soto and the Red Sox. Pretty good sports day here.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole with its V-shaped stud configuration is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.